It's time to learn all you can about buying, selling, financing, and developing real estate in today's market. Welcome to Mortgage Solutions with Tim Halliday, the show that provides you with the information you need when considering any real estate venture. Just sit back, grab a cup of coffee, and get your questions ready, because Tim will be helping you attain your goals in the complex world of real estate. Here's your host, Tim Halliday.
Welcome to Mortgage Solutions. I am your host, Tim Halliday. The purpose of this show is to educate you about real estate and real estate financing so you are better equipped to take on the largest transactions of your life. Yes, I use the plural intentionally because I believe everybody should own more than one piece of real estate at a time. All right, let's start off by talking about the market real quick. The Dow is up 296 points today. It's going nuts, and it's sitting at 17,653. So that little dip we had last week is all gone. It has leveled out. And yesterday, it closed up over 220 points. So a couple of major gains in a very short time. The 10-year bond is up. It's at 2.21 today, 221, which is pretty good. It hasn't jumped as much as everybody had expected it would. There's a huge sell-off today in the bond market. So typically that you see bond prices go nuts when that happens, and you see interest rates go up. However, that really hasn't happened today. A little bit, the 3.5% Fannie Mae coupon is sitting at 104.01. So that's actually pretty good. Rates are very low. I mean, you're right around 4% on the on a 30-year fixed loan, and you're well under 4% on an FHA or any government loan. So really good rates still, even though they're creeping up. And I would say it's a great time, actually, to consider a refinance. You might want to take a look at your current mortgage. If you are at anywhere from 4.5, if you have a big enough mortgage, you know, if you're sitting on a $250,000, $300,000 mortgage and you're at 4.5, it might be time to look at that and maybe even shift it over to a 15-year at a 3.5% rate. Take advantage of that interest rate. Pay it off much more quickly. Maybe you've been paying on that for 10 years and you got like 20 years left, but you got a higher balance and a little higher rate. Might be a great time to shift it. Keep your payment pretty much the same. Might go up a little bit, but take advantage of a lower rate and pay it off much faster. Cut 5 years off your mortgage. That would save you tens of thousands of dollars. So anyway, if you're curious about that, give me a call in my office at 899-7700, and we can certainly go over that. Take me a few minutes. I do the math with you, and I will tell you, yes, this makes sense. No, this doesn't make sense. Keep doing what you're doing. I don't know any other way to say it. I'll go over the math with you. At some point, you're going to have to either learn the math or trust someone. So I would rather have you call my office and have me tell you no than have you call somewhere just so that they can do a mortgage. They'll tell you, yeah, you're going to save 20 grand, but it's going to cost you 5 grand and it's going to add 2 years to your mortgage. So really, you're not saving 20 grand. So that's the, I look at the math like 17 different ways from Sunday and any way that I can to make sure that you're actually saving money. All right, so let's jump in today. I'm very excited today. We are going to be talking about a variety of things surrounding you and getting a mortgage. So if you're considering buying real estate and going to the bank for money, or if you're the seller of a property and are considering some creative financing, you need to know some key things to prepare for. So today, you are going to learn 5 major issues that can slow down or stop your loan in its tracks. We're going to cover all of that today. So a little more detail here. You're going to learn what every lender needs to approve your loan. We're going to talk about those 5 major issues. And when I come to them, I will let you know that this is one of them. And then we're going to talk about how to plan and prepare for your loan in advance. And some of that you'll glean from our conversations as we go. But there's an actual process that you're going to benefit from when we get toward the end of the show, if we can get it all in today. I am live in studio today, so it's not all about me getting done. It's about helping you by answering questions. So if you have a question today, please give me a call. I'm live in studio at 862-2373. That's if you're calling on Thursday, the 18th of December, 2014. 862-2373. is our number here, and Maureen will take your call and put you through to me, and we can answer some questions for you if you decide to give me a call. If you want to call afterwards, that's fine too. Again, that number is 899-7700. That's my office number. I'm not there now. I'm here with you. But you can always call me later. For Living Well Realty, if you want to get started on selling your house, a great way to do that is to call Living Well Realty. And you can speak to me, Tim, at 899-5000. You can also ask for Chris. Chris is a broker in our office. He handles much of our real estate side. And he will do a great job for you. I guarantee it. So let's jump in here. Every lender reviews several aspects of your life to determine your qualification. So what are the big things that lenders look at? So every guideline, regulation that is out there is written specifically to answer one of these questions or concerns to mitigate the risk of the lender. So they want to know everything they need to know about your credit, your income. So income is, they're looking at your ratios based on what you earn versus what you owe. That shows up on your credit report. They're looking at your assets. They want to make sure that you have enough money to buy, and in many cases, enough money for reserves. So if you think reserves are just a warm, fuzzy thing that you maybe should think about, you're wrong. It's actually a requirement in underwriting. So assets are a huge category that we're going to talk about today. Talk about these five major roadblocks. Three of them are in the asset category. And then collateral. Of course, the lender wants to know, A, that you have a history of paying, that's your credit. B, that you have the ability to pay, that's your income. C, that you have the ability to put some money into the project, which commits you, so that's the assets. And D, the collateral. So the collateral is the property that you're purchasing. Typically, and we're going to touch base on this when we get down to it, but typically collateral is not as big a concern to me with regard to getting you ready for a purchase. Now, if you're a seller, there is a concern there. So you're going to want to pay attention to that. That risk is mitigated by the lenders, by the way, by a term called LTV, which is loan to value. So the riskier the loan, the smaller the loan to value. In other words, the less they're going to lend you based on the value of the property. So on a $100,000 property, if you borrow $70,000, that's a 70% loan to value. So, and that would be a loan that might be very risky. For instance, if that was a three-unit building being purchased by an investor, that's actually the correct loan to value for that type of loan. That way, because the default rate is high on those loans, if the lender decides to take that collateral back because you're not making the payment, they have some room in that loan that they can sell that off and protect their collateral. So they're not going to loan you 95% of the value like they do if you're going to live there, because people are much less likely to let go of their homes if they're living in them, which stands to reason. And unfortunately, it's proven out. So by the way, none of these lenders build these guidelines based on their idea of what they think might be risky. These are all mathematical algorithms. These are all risk analyses built on years, decades actually, of statistics and human behavior. And so they're actually very scientifically arrived at. Now, politicians jump in there and they kind of muddy the water and they make things a little harder depending on the climate right now. For instance, things are harder now because of the crash of 2008, or they make them easier because it's politically expedient to make people feel like they can buy a house when they actually can't afford it. So even though you see guidelines change, people understand, the people that are actually putting them in play understand what risk they're getting into. Sometimes they naively kick the can down the road. Sometimes they intentionally kick the can down the road. But nonetheless, the statistics are out there and they're pretty well defined. So a lender knows that if they make 1,000 loans, they're going to take 17 of them back based on this product. They pretty much know that going in, that they're going to have to foreclose on those. Now, that doesn't take into effect any catastrophic things that can happen, climate things that happen, you know, big snowstorms or droughts or earthquakes, you know, things that impact big regions. Those are unpredictable. But again, even those things are built into the statistics if you have enough time involved. All right, so let's talk about these five major issues that can derail your loan, and this is important, how to avoid them. So the first major issue, which stands to reason, it's kind of a no-brainer, is bad credit. So if you don't know your credit score, chances are it's not very good. And I don't mean to the dime, you know, to the absolute number. I mean, if you don't know about what your credit score is, chances are it's not good, because people that pay attention to their credit scores know where they're at. And I'll give you, this is a great example. People that step on the scale every day tend to lose weight more than and be thinner than people who don't step on the scale. Not that stepping on the scale makes you lose weight, but it makes you aware. So if you know what your credit score is, you're going to be more cognizant of the actions you take or, unfortunately, don't take sometimes before you jump into a transaction or before you decide not to pay a bill or before you ignore that piece of mail or before you pay extra attention to a piece of mail. So that's a fact. So that's one of those things that's kind of inarguable. So bad credit. If you don't know what your score is, you need to know what your score is. So I'm going to talk a little bit about that. You're going to love this. So if you understand how your score is determined, it will certainly help you understand where your score is. So there are five factors that determine your credit score. And here they are by percentage, by the way. So these are the exact formulas, pieces of the formulas. Believe me, there are so many variables that this doesn't begin to, but these are the categories that they're looking at. So 35% of your score is your payment history. In other words, do you make your payments on time? Now, when I first read this, I was very surprised, because that's not a very big percentage. Most people think, well, if I make all my payments on time, nothing else matters and I'll have a great credit score. That is not the case. I had a client come through my door a couple of days ago, actually, and I pulled his credit, and he has to raise his scores. But you know what? The last time he made a late payment was 3.5 years ago. So his credit was perfect, and he had quite a bit of credit. But he had a couple of small cards, which was all the revolving credit that he had, and they were maxed out. So it decimated his score beyond the point where he's going to qualify for the loan that he wants. And he hadn't missed a payment in 3.5 years. So 35% of your score is your payment history. So it's very important. It's the most important factor, but it's not everything. So the next highest one is your credit use. The percent of available credit compared to the existing balances. So if you have a $500 credit card and you have $497 on it, it's going to lower your score significantly, by the way. And if you're over the limit, it's really going to hurt your score. The great news about that is if you make a payment on that of $400 and it's down to $100, your score will pop up instantaneously. So the next month that you pull it, I can force your score. I have some tools that I can do that with. So I can literally, in a day, I can get your score raised, or 2 days. You know, 72 hours is their typical advertised turn time. We can get it done a little quicker. So that's a big deal. So how you use your credit card. So what you want is 3 or 4 revolving credit lines of credit, so credit cards, and you want to keep those balances as low as you can, but not zero. If you keep them at zero, they don't show up as part of your score. They're unused. So you want to keep a $10 balance on 2 or 3 credit cards. And if you have a couple of cards that are all maxed out, you want to shift those around. And you can do that a couple of ways. You can put them on other credit cards that aren't maxed out. You can call the credit company. Let's say you've never missed a payment. You have a great credit history, but your scores are low right now because you got 2 cards that are pushing the max. Call the card companies and ask them to raise your limits. It does exactly the same thing. That's going to improve your credit because that ratio of available credit is going to go up. So 30% is credit use. The next 15% is aging. How long have you had those accounts open? Aging is a big deal, because if you go out and open 5 new credit cards, you're going to have almost no time. So even though they may be paid perfect for 2 or 3 months, you're never going to achieve that super high credit score until those accounts just take enough time to report enough. So 12 months, 24 months. Most lenders are looking for 24-month accounts. So if you have accounts that are 24 months or more, that's a good thing. If you don't, open them today so that you can get those aging, because time is the only way to affect that one. The next 10% is credit mix, so installment debt like a car loan or a student loan, revolving debt, and mortgage. Those are the real three categories. So if you don't have a mortgage yet, you can still have fantastic credit, but not if you don't have a credit card. I see students that come right out of college and they've got, you know, $150,000 in installment debt and terrible credit scores because they don't have a $500 credit card. So you've got to have some credit cards. And keep in mind, credit scores were invented by credit bureaus, or I'm sorry, by credit cards. That's who invented credit scores, was credit cards. So you've got to have some credit cards if you want a good score. And the last 10% is credit searching. So how many inquiries do you have? Are you surfing around? Are you gathering a whole bunch of credit all at once? Are you having a bunch of people pull your credit? And there's some myths involved in that. That's a whole other show that I'm not going to get into today. But suffice it to say, it's a scam when people tell you that you can't have a competitor pull your credit right after when you're shopping for a car loan, for instance. You can have 15 car dealers pull your credit in 3 days, and it affects you one time. Same thing is true for mortgages. So it's the window is 30 days. So if you have three banks pull your credit within 30 days, it only impacts your score once. But salespeople will try to take you off the market by making you believe that it's going to hurt your score to shop for a loan. Don't buy into that. That's a bunch of garbage. I, as usual, have run long on this segment, so I am going to, when we come back, we're going to start talking about some of the other, that's one, by the way, out of five is bad credit. So we've got some other, four other categories to try to cover in a short time, and we'll be right back. As a Capital Region local for 22 years, I've been on all sides of the home buying and selling process. Buying several investment properties myself, I know what concerns you have, and I will not place you in a home that is more than you can afford. This is about what's right for you, not me. As a servant of the Lord, I am accountable to God Himself for every single thing that I do, including helping you into that new home. To be a good steward, I'm not only a registered mortgage broker, but a licensed real estate broker as well. With 20 plus years of experience, I will help you through the entire process. I disclose all of the standard fees up front to make sure there are no surprises at your closing. Call me for any of your mortgage needs today at 899-7700. That's 899-7700.
Victory Funding is a New York State registered mortgage broker. All loans through third-party providers.
Welcome back to Mortgage Solutions. I'm your host, Tim Halliday. We are live in studio today if you're listening on December 18th, 2014. And we are excited to have you with us today. If you have a question, you can give me a call at 862-2373, 862-2373, and we will try to answer your question. If you have a question off air, you can give me a call at my office, 899-7700, and I will be happy to get you ready to buy your next home or to help you buy your next home. All right, so let's talk about some of the other major issues. The next one is income miscalculation. A lot of people will tell you what they earn, and this is especially true. This isn't that people are trying to deceive me when they tell me this, but if I ask a self-employed, let's say a contractor, how much money you earn, and he tells me I made $150,000 last year, he is telling me 100% the truth. But when I look at his tax return, he paid laborers $75,000, and he paid material men, you know, he paid for materials to the tune of $50,000, and his tax return shows that he made $25,000. So he earned $150,000. People paid him that money, but that's not what shows up at the bottom line on his tax return. So you have to understand not only how much money you make, but how a lender is going to view how much money you make. And there are so many nuances on this. I could spend 10 shows. I could do a 3-day seminar on income calculation. But instead, I'm going to give you some of the basic tenets of how this is done and then let you figure out your own income or give me a call. If I don't know the answer, and not every income is the same, but there are guidelines on this. There are pages and pages and pages of this stuff. When I look at Fannie Mae, Freddie Mac, FHA guidelines on how to calculate income, it's very specific. So if you get a W-2, if you have a job and you get a paycheck and you get a W-2 at the end of the year, that's the easiest. So it's your gross income. And so you look at your pay stub, and if you're a salary, that's even easier. If you know you work for the state and you make $54,820 a year, we divide it by 12 and you're done. That's that easy. If you're a W-2 and you're 40 hours a week, again, I can look at your pay stub. It's easy. Self-employed, I need to see 2 years of tax returns. And I'm looking at the net, not the gross. But, and there's always a but with income, but I'm not just looking at that bottom line, because it may be, for instance, I'll give you, this is a great example. Truck driver, owns a trucking company, all right? He's self-employed. He owns 3 trucks, one of which he just bought. 2 of them are older and don't have payments on them. I look at his tax return, and he shows a bottom line of $45,000. But when I go look at his Schedule C, I can see on his Schedule C that he's depreciating those trucks because they're vehicles. And he's got $18,000 of depreciation. So now all of a sudden, his 40, I can add that back in, because depreciation is make-believe money that the IRS allows you to not pay tax on. And really what depreciation is the government allowing you to buy things that drive your business without having to pay tax on them. So you pay tax immediately, but then you collect that money back over several years, depending on the type of property. So I can look at that, and now his $45,000 income is all of a sudden $73,000 worth of income. So those are the types of things that I look for when I look at a tax return. But I've got to see the tax return, because there are several other categories that can be added back in. So if you're self-employed, again, 2 years of tax returns. Losses are a big deal. If you have declining income, so let's say you are in the real estate business and you made $85,000 in 2012, but you made $65,000 in 2013. Normally, I could average those two, but because it's declining income, I have to use the lower. So your income is $65,000. And maybe your year-to-date is $85,000 again, and you're going to make $90,000 this year, has no bearing on it. On a self-employed borrower, I can't use your year-to-date income. I can only use your history. So being as we're at the 18th of December, it's very good news, because if you haven't filed your 2014 taxes yet, we can wait a couple of weeks, let you file your taxes, and we can use a higher income. So losses are a big deal. And again, depends on how the losses are taken. It depends on all sorts of different things. Is it a one-time loss? Sometimes I have a borrower right now has a $40,000 one-time loss, but I don't have to count that against him because it's a one-time loss. I have a letter from his accountant, and we should be good to go. And I am, in fact. I ran it past an underwriter already. So there are dozens of ways to calculate income, but here are the basic things that you will need to know in order to calculate your own income. First of all, in order to count the income, you have to have a 2-year history of receiving that income. Now, some incomes don't count like that. Retirement income, for instance, if you just retired, I can use your retirement income because you've been paying into it for your whole life. And it's, you know, it's pretty much there's a history of receiving it because it's going to be ongoing. So the other part of that, 2-year history, and then I have to have a 3-year likelihood of continuance. So another quick example of that, I have borrowers that have sold a business. They got a 4-year payout. They have 1 year to be able to use that income toward getting a loan, because when they have 35 months left of that income, I can't count a dollar of it. So you've got to have a 3-year likelihood of continuance. So that's the basics on the income. All right, asset documentation. So this, the other three, by the way, are in this category of asset documentation. These can be showstoppers for you. First of all, you're allowed to be the income. Any assets that you need to purchase a home are allowed to be borrowed from secured sources only. So if you borrow it from a secured source, like a home equity line of credit, or if you're buying an investment property, or you're borrowing against a 401k, or and there's an exception there. But if you're borrowing against something else, a car, for instance, you can borrow against a car. It has to be secured against collateral. Then I can count that money, that asset. You must document all deposits over 50% of your paycheck. So that's a showstopper. That's one of the big five. So if you have, let's say you sold a car, maybe it was a car sitting in your yard, and you sold it. You got $3,000 for it. Somebody came. You put it on Craigslist. You got $3,000 cash. You put it in your bank. We are done. I can't use a dollar of that money. In order to count that asset, I have to document where the money came from. And in that case, if you sold something, I have to show that you owned it. I have to have proof what it was worth. I have to have proof that you sold it, who you sold it to, how much you got for it, and then I have to see that money and go have it go into your account. So I can't have a handwritten note that I paid $3,000 and then a $3,000 cash deposit in your account. You've got to have a bank check. I've got to have a photocopy. I've got to be able to document that transaction. So document, document, document. If you have, I have so many stories about these crazy things. I'm going to run out of time before I have a chance to finish this anyway, so I'm just going to tell you this story because it's so ridiculous. I had a borrower one time that had a we were going to use just the husband on the loan. We decided that the husband had actually made a weird deposit, so we couldn't use him anymore. So now we were going to use the wife. Well, the wife had been being careful until she thought she wasn't going to be on the loan, and then she kind of didn't pay attention. And so she had a check, a deposit in her account for about $1,150. So we had to document that deposit. Well, she threw a shower for a friend, and all her friends gave her personal checks and cash toward this shower that she threw, and she deposited it all in her account. So I had to document every one of those checks as a gift. I had to go back and prove what the money was for. They thought she had a side business because the next few expenses were catering expenses. So they thought she had a catering business on the side. That was not the case. She threw a party for a friend. But the documentation on that was an absolute nightmare. So avoid making weird deposits. In fact, I will say avoid making any deposits to your account that are not your payroll. If they're direct deposit, that's perfect. So if you deal with cash for whatever reason, you got a little side thing going, you mow lawns and get cash, whatever that is, open another account. I don't want to see that. But we also can't use that money towards your purchase of your house. So there are other ways to do that. I can't believe how fast this time goes. We are running out of time in a hurry. But if you have questions, again, you're not going to be able to call me here. Call me the office, 899-7700. The next show is going to be on Christmas Day. So it's going to be recorded. So yeah, I just want you to have a very Merry Christmas. I'll be able to tell you live today. I'm going to tell you again next week, but it's going to be recorded. So God bless you all. And thank you again for a wonderful year in advance. I just appreciate it very much, and I appreciate all of the listeners out there that call me with questions and concerns and praise and all sorts of great things. So you guys are great. This is Tim Halliday reminding you to renew your mind daily, stay positive, and be a blessing to those God puts you in contact with. Remember, your attitude and your actions are your choice. May God richly bless you, and have a wonderful day.
To start the process of buying a home, investing in real estate, or obtaining a mortgage for purchase or refinance, call the offices of Victory Funding today at 899-7700. That's 899-7700. Victory Funding is a New York State registered mortgage broker with offices in Malta, New York. NMLS number 49846. All loans are through third-party providers.